likes to have fun, and so do I. So that's good. That's good. No, I went back to Alder Springs, which is Rachel's home congregation, and her dad preached there for years and years, and I've been there a year and a half. They've not run me off yet, so I think we're doing okay. But it's good to be here. We were here 2 years ago. Love Paul and Cherie, and thank a lot of them, and good close friends, and they mean a lot to us, and y'all got a great church here, and Brother Robert does a great job. He told me, I saw him at the Diana singing last Friday night, and it's the first time I'd ever been to the Diana singing. I'd never been there before, but it was beautiful, wonderful singing. But Robert made me a little bit nervous about tonight. The speaker y'all had last Wednesday, he said he just did an excellent, outstanding job. And then you're going to have, you know, then you're coming, you know. So he sort of, you know, made me a little bit nervous, but it sort of reminded me of the man that went to the doctor. And he went in to the doctor, and the doctor came back and said, "Well, sir, I've got some bad news." He said, "You've got 1 year to live." And the man said, "1 year?" He said, "Well, what can I do?" Doctor said, "I'll tell you exactly what to do." He said, "Go sell everything you've got and marry the first woman that you see that has 9 kids. And the man said, "Will that cure me?" He said, "No, but it will be the longest year of your life." So I hope you don't leave tonight and say, "Well, it was the longest church service I've ever been at," you know. Life lessons from Abraham. Besides Moses, Abraham is mentioned the most of any Old Testament character in the New Testament. He's mentioned some 75 times, Abraham is, in the New Testament. The life of Abraham, as you all know, is recorded from Genesis 11 to Genesis 25. Three of the world's greatest or great religions trace their roots back to Abraham. That's how special he was and is: Judaism through Isaac, Islam through Ishmael, and Christianity through Christ. They all claim that they came from Abraham. And Abraham is a very interesting study. He carried a distinction that no one else in the Bible carried. James chapter 2 and verse 23, the Bible says, "And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." And so I want to learn from a man that was referred to and called the friend of God, don't you? I want to know, what are his characteristics? What did he do in his life that I can learn as an example, and in turn I can be a friend of God? And so we're going to look at three different qualities that Abraham possessed and see life lessons that we can learn from these three qualities tonight. Point number one is this: Abraham was a man of faith and action. Faith plus action. Turn to Genesis chapter 12 with me. It's really where it all begins, in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 4 is what we're going to look at. "Now the Lord had said to Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from the father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran." Now, Abraham, 75 years old, he was settled in his home. He was a wealthy man. Genesis chapter 13, verse 2, Abram was very rich in livestock, silver, and gold. It's estimated that where he lived, land of Ur, was one of the greatest cities during that time period. Some 25,000 people lived inside the city walls, and 200 lived outside the walls. But in the city, this was a city where Abraham was living, where he had resided. In the city, it was common to have two-story homes with about 10 to 20 rooms in each home. So Abraham left his, think about this, Abraham left his two-story home at the age of 75. I don't know if we have any 75ers in here tonight or not, but most of the time when you're 70, 75, 80, you don't want to move, right? So I'm settled, I'm not going to move, I've done that, I'm not doing it again. And he moved and he spent the rest of his life camping in a tent, sleeping on the ground. Why? Because God told him to. That's why. Abraham was a man of great faith. Because not only did he leave his comfortable life, his comfortable home, pack all of his family up, went on a trip, he had no idea where he was going. Look at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, of course, speaks of many men and women of great faith. But in verses 8 and 9, it says this, "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise." Abraham did all of this on a promise from God that he would be the father of many nations. That's faith. That's faith. And not only is that faith, that's faith plus action. Faith plus action. He did something. He was required to do something by God, and he did something. So here is life lesson number one. If you're taking notes, if you're writing them in a notepad or in your Bible, life lesson number one that we can learn from Abraham, let's be men and women of faith plus action. Let's be Christians of faith plus action. God told Abraham to do several things, and he would receive the promise. Have faith and move to another land. Have faith and sacrifice your son. Have faith and obey what I am telling you to do. And he did all of those things. And God has also told us some things that we have to do, faith plus action, and we'll receive the promise. Have faith and obey my commands, John 14 and verse 15. Have faith and worship me, John 4 and verse 24. Have faith and pray to me, 1 Thessalonians 5 and 17. Have faith and live a good, faithful life like Paul, 2 Timothy 4, 7 and 8. Have faith and obey and deny yourself and follow me, Matthew 16 and verse 24. See, it's not just about having faith. If we read through those things in Hebrews chapter 11, we came across Moses and Noah and Abraham, and we see all these great things they did. They had faith, but they also had action. They had works. Turn over to James chapter 2. James chapter 2. James chapter 2, and many we all know what this says, but it's starting in verse 18. Someone will say, "You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works. I will show you my faith by my works." Verse 19, "You believe that there is one God, you do well, and the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered Isaac his son on the altar?" We'll talk about that in point number two. Verse 22, "Do you see that faith was working together with his works, and by works faith was made perfect? And the scripture is fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, it was counted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." Verse 24, "And you see then that a man is justified by works, not by faith alone." Then you skip down to verse 26. "For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also." It's not enough to say that we have faith. We have to prove our faith by the works that we do every single day. That's exactly what Abraham did thousands of years ago. He had to prove his faith. "Yes, Lord, I have faith." Prove it. Prove it. If you want to be a friend of God, we have to obey and do everything he wants us to do. From believing, having faith, to being baptized, Mark chapter 16, 15 and 16, to following him when times are easy and following him when times are hard. From leaving our homes, our families, our money, if we have to, Matthew 19 and verse 21. In James chapter 1 and verse 22, if you back up a little bit in James, Be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. Be doers, not hearers only. Abraham was a doer of the word, wasn't he? God said, you do it, Abraham did it. God said, you go, Abraham went. God said, you sacrifice, Abraham sacrificed. There was no questions, there was no argument, there was no better plan. Without flinching, without blinking an eye, Abraham went and he added works to his faith. We have to, Peter says, you remember in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 5, we have to add some things to our faith, or our faith, and I don't mean this in a bad way, if we are not adding something to our faith is worthless. It's worthless. It means nothing. It's in vain. We can sit here all day long and say, I go to church. I go to Tanner Church of Christ. I have faith in God. I believe in God. What do you do? What do you mean, what do I do? What do you do? How do you show that faith? Well, I go to church. I'm here every time. Okay, what else do you do? Well, I don't know. I don't know. You say, what can I do? What can I do? What are some works that I can do? I want to tell you, if somebody tells me, hey, I don't know what to do for the Lord, I don't know what good works I'm good at or what good works I can do, it's hard for me not to say, well, you're not looking hard enough. Real easy to find. I've got a sheet, and I should have brought it tonight, a list, front and back, 50 on each side. Christian good works, 50 on one side and 50 on the back. 100 that a man came up with. And you could sit down, you could come up with 100 as well. Here's the point. Just like Abraham, life lesson, we have to add works to our faith. Here's an example. Several years ago, a man had two boys. He was going to take them to the circus. They'd been excited all week about going to the circus. This was years and years ago. And the man walked up to the counter. They were not in the circus yet, but they were outside on the booth trying to buy tickets. The man walked up to the ticket booth, and he was standing in line, and in front of this man with the two boys was a man and woman that had five kids. And the man that was second in line, he observed these children, and they were in rags. Some of them didn't have shoes on their feet. And the man stood up with five children and said, I need 7 tickets. When the person selling the tickets told him the price, the man's head just dropped. Evidently, he hadn't been to the circus in a long time. He knew he didn't have enough money to pay for his whole family to go into the circus. The man with the two boys, he reached into his pocket and he threw a $20 bill at the man's feet and he tapped him on the shoulder. He said, excuse me, sir, excuse me. The man turned around. He said, I think you dropped something out of your pocket. The man with the five kids turned around and picked the $20 bill up. And he looked at that fellow with tears in his eyes. He said, thank you, thank you. And he paid for his family. And the man with the two boys, he looked down at his boys and he said, boys, he said, we're not going to the circus tonight. The man telling that story, I heard the boy that told that story, true story. He said, I knew right then that my dad had the heart of a servant. I want to ask you tonight, do you have the heart of a servant? Do you have the heart of a servant? Are you looking for opportunities to help your fellow man, to show people my faith? I mean, I can tell them my faith all day long. I can open the Bible and we can preach to them and we know the verses and we know the scriptures and we know the 5 steps of salvation. We all know that. But our neighbor doesn't know that. You know what my neighbor knows? My actions. They know my actions. You know what my coworker knows? I'm probably never going to sit down with my coworker and open up Acts 2:38. That probably, now that happens sometimes, but you know what he sees? He's reading us every single day. How does he talk? How does he act? How does he react when people do him wrong? That's taking the example of Abraham and adding works to our faith. And we have to look, we have to be on guard, look for opportunities. They're all around us. They're all around. I promise you, I don't know, I promise, there's 127 here on Sunday mornings, what y'all have on the board. 127. I almost guarantee that out of 127 people, you have a church member that is lonely. I almost guarantee that you've got a church, at least one church, you might have 10. You have a church member that is lonely and that is wishing and hoping that somebody would give them a call or send them a card. And I'm not saying you don't do that. I'm just saying there's opportunity everywhere. Look for it and add works to your faith. Just like the little girl that made a difference in Sunday school. Sunday school teacher was about to start the class. Visitor came in, never been to church before, came with his grandmother. And he was very nervous, you could tell. And what was interesting about this little boy is he was missing one of his hands. He had his arm, but his hand was totally gone. And so all throughout the class, the teacher was thinking, boy, I hope these students, you know, kids sometimes, they don't mean to hurt feelings. I hope these students don't say something, you know. I hope they don't say something. And of course, as many times it happens, it was the teacher that said the wrong thing. At the end of the class, she wasn't even thinking. She says, okay, everybody, let's sing our last song. She said, let's put our hands together. And she said, here's the building, here's the steeple. Y'all remember the song. Let's put our hands together. And when she did that, she thought, oh no. Little girl was sitting beside the boy with the missing hand. And she saw an opportunity. And she nudged him. She said, hey, she said, let's build ours together. Let's build ours together. That's adding action to your faith. That's adding works to your faith. And that's exactly what Abraham did. And that's what we need to be doing every single day that we live. We can do something. We can do something. Y'all have Chick-fil-A around here? I just ate at one at Hampton Cove. I need to buy stock in Chick-fil-A. I really do. I eat there all the time. But this is sort of a funny story, but I was walking into Chick-fil-A some time ago, and I saw an opportunity, you know, to do good. A Chick-fil-A worker, looked like he had been working, you know, several hours. I mean, you could tell he was going home. So he was coming, fixing to come out the door. I was fixing to open the door, so I opened the door for him like this. You know, a good opportunity, a good work, right? I smiled, and he said, thank you, and I said, my pleasure. And he didn't think it was funny, but I thought it was pretty good. Find opportunities to do good works. Number two, Abraham lived a life of faith plus action. Number two, Abraham was a man of sacrifice. He was a man of sacrifice. You go to Genesis chapter 22, and I don't know if we have time to read the whole thing. I don't think we will. But you remember the story in Genesis chapter 22. In the first 13 verses, God tested Abraham. He said, take your son Isaac. He says, whom you love, in verse 2, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I'll tell you. And I think it's so interesting, verse 3. Verse 2, God says, go offer your son, Abraham. Verse 3, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey. Let's go. A couple days journey, but let's go. Could you imagine if somebody said, hey, Mark, you're going to have to offer Ben or Hannah. We're going to have to talk about this. what's in it for me? Hold on, we got to, I don't know about offering. What do you mean offering, you know? Not Abraham. Saddles his donkey. Man of sacrifice. He knows He knows. Think about this son. Waited 25 years on the promise of his son Isaac. He knew that through Isaac, Abraham knew this, through Isaac all the nations would be blessed. Can you imagine that Abraham was a little bit overprotective of Isaac? I would imagine he was. Hey, the promise has got to go through him. And throughout his childhood, maybe he protected him a little bit more than most people. We don't know how old Isaac was. Josephus thinks he was around 25 years old at the time. That's fine with me. He was a youngster, you know. I heard some people say as low as 13, from 13 to 25. But Abraham didn't flinch. The next morning, took Isaac, some other men. They started their journey to Moriah, about 3 days away. They get to the place. Abraham says, well, y'all stay here, me and Isaac going to worship, and we will return. He takes his son, and this is what just hurts me. He takes his son, and he binds his son's hand, lays him on the altar. You think they struggled? You ever think about that? Think Abraham and Isaac struggled? Isaac said, Dad, what are you doing? Why do you have that rope around my hands? Maybe they did. I don't know. Then he raises his knife, about to kill his son. The angel of the Lord calls out. And in verse 12, he says, do not lay a hand on the lad or do anything to harm him, for now I know that you fear God. Now I know. He didn't know it before. Now I know, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. It took a sacrifice. It took a sacrifice for Abraham. Friends of God are willing to sacrifice for him. Here's life lesson number two. Life lesson number two. Be willing to sacrifice any and everything for the cause of Christ. That's what Abraham did. Be willing to sacrifice any and everything for the cause of Christ. I want to ask you another question. What does your religion cost you today? What does your faith cost you today? It cost Abraham his home, his comfortable life. It cost him the sacrifice of his son, almost. He was there, but he was willing to give it all to God. And if we're going to be called friends of God, we have to offer him the best, not the scraps. And I'm afraid that in our lives we get so comfortable that we forget to sacrifice some things. As Christians, just like Abraham, just like all the great characters of the Old Testament, New Testament, we have to live a life of sacrifice. Sacrifice our time, our talents, our money, ourselves. You know what Christ called it? You know what Jesus called it? Going the second mile. That's what he called it. Sacrifice. Turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. We know this is a Sermon on the Mount, 5, 6, and 7. Jesus is introducing his teachings, and the people are amazed. They're astonished. They can't believe what they're hearing. And in verse 40 of Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says this, if anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also, and whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. Back in the first century, the Jews were commanded by the Romans to carry their load for 1 mile. They were commanded. You had to do it. And the Jews, absolutely, you can imagine, the Jews despised this. So they would, and they had these mile markers set up. And the Jews would get to the mile marker, having all that, their pack, whatever it was on the back, they would get to the mile marker and they would throw the pack over the mile marker. They would not step 1 foot over what they were commanded to do. And Jesus comes in, and knowing they despise this, knowing they wouldn't put not 1 foot over that mile marker, he comes in and he says, okay, I want you to go 2 miles. 2 miles. The second mile Christian. This is the mile of want to, not have to. This is the mile of conviction, not convenience. This is the mile of sacrifice, not selfishness. I want to ask you another question. Are you a second mile Christian tonight? would you call yourself a second-mile Christian? I'd say you're here on Wednesday night. So I'd say, yeah, you probably are. But I know this, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. I'm afraid that we have a problem going on in the Lord's church. And the problem is that our pews are filled with half-milers. Half-milers. Half-milers say this: how little can I get by with? That's a half-miler's attitude. What is the very least as a Christian? What is the least I can do in the church? What is the least I can do to make it to heaven? Jesus says that attitude's not going to work. That half-miler attitude is not going to work. Half-milers say this. And again, I don't think this is the group I'm talking to, but you probably know some of them. Half-milers say this: I will pray, but I will not pray for my enemies. That's a half-miler's attitude. A half-miler says, I'll help those that are grateful, but I'm not giving a penny to those that are ungrateful for what I give them. Half-milers say, I'll go to church, but not if I have a ball game or not if I'm tired from work. I'll give a little money to the Lord, but not enough that it's going to hurt my budget. I got to have enough to go out and eat. I'll go and visit the sick, as long as I don't have to give up my Saturdays. Second mile Christian doesn't ask, what can I get by with? Second mile Christian says, how much can I do? How much can I do? That's a second mile Christian. That's living a life of sacrifice. What would you think would happen if a Roman soldier came by, woke the Jew up in the middle of the night, hey, get up, carry my pack. You're commanded, carry it for a mile. The man gets out of bed, he picks up the soldier's pack, and he gets to the mile marker. And of course, the Roman soldier is ready for him to throw it across the mile marker. And the Jew keeps going. And the Roman soldier says, no, hey, you can put it down now. You've done what you're commanded to do. You've done your duty. You can put it down. And the Jew says, come on, I'll take it a second mile. What do you think that Roman soldier would do? Say, man, what's wrong? What's wrong with you? You're doing more than you're commanded. It's called sacrifice. Think about this. You go 1 mile, you have to come back 1 mile, right? If you go 2 miles, I mean, I was going to go to get out and try this today. I didn't want to walk 4 miles. You know, if you go 2 miles, that's 4 miles. What that means is Jesus is saying, be a second-mile Christian, and if you're a second-mile Christian, it's going to cost you something. It's going to cost you something. Many people come to the Lord and come to the church, and they think, well, I got a new life. Life's going to be good. It's not going to cost me anything. It's a wrong attitude. It's going to cost your time to be at worship. It's going to cost your talents. We need you. The Lord's church needs you to do things. It's going to cost you your social status, young people, middle-aged people sometimes. It's going to cost you your social status. It's going to cost us our service. David said, 2 Samuel 24 and verse 24. I love this verse. 2 Samuel 24:24. David said, I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God with that which costs me nothing. David said, I'm not going to offer burnt offerings to God that costs me nothing. Martin Luther said this, a religion that gives nothing, costs nothing, and suffers nothing is worth nothing. And I agree. I agree. The second mile is hard. The second mile is painful. The second mile will cost you something, but I want everybody to understand this. Real Christians are found in the second mile. Real Christians are found in the second mile. And I want to encourage you, I know this group probably is, this probably needs to be taught on Sunday morning, I would imagine. But I want to encourage you, and then I want to encourage you to encourage your family and your friends that are not second mile Christians. Tell them, be a second mile Christian in your church attendance. I look on the board, I don't I didn't look previously, but I can turn around. I bet I know what it says. 127, 73, 63. It's exactly right. Alder Springs, same numbers. Anywhere you go, same numbers. Why is that? Why is that? Because they're not second mile Christians. Be a second mile Christian in your giving. Give till it hurts. Give till you feel it. Be a second mile Christian, you're visiting. Somebody says, I'm not a good visitor. You visit until you become a great visitor. Go visit. Maybe it's out of your comfort zone. Step out. Abraham sure did. Be a second mile Christian in evangelism. Go out and teach somebody. Somehow, some way, teach them. In your service, in your marriage, in your workplace, in your life. There's a man that worked for the Goodyear Tire Company. He loved the Lord. He was a happy, joyous Christian. He was just working hard. I mean, just loved his job. And some of the men turned around and told him, he said, slow down. You're making us look bad. And he said, I'm not trying to make you look bad. I'm trying to make Jesus look good. In our lives, let's try to make Jesus look good in everything that we do. Second mile Christians. Life lesson number one, have faith plus action. Life lesson number two, be willing to sacrifice any and everything for the cause of Christ. And then number three, Abraham was a man with a goal. He was a man with a vision, with a goal in mind. Why did Abraham sacrifice and worship and do all the things that God asked him to do? You know the answer. Because he wanted to go and live with God in heaven. That's why he did it. Go to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, starting in verse 13. Hebrews 11 and verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. The friend of God knows that this world is not the end. This world is not our home, that there is a world to come. Abraham knew that. He was looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. And if we want to be like Abraham in our lives, life lesson number three is this. Live your life always thinking about your goal, heaven. Live your life always thinking about your goal, which is heaven. If we live our lives focused on this world, and so many people, young and old, they live their lives focused just on the things that they can see, focused on the things around them, will never want to worship, never want to sacrifice, never want to obey. But we have to live our lives focused on the world to come. And when we focus on the world to come, we'll have no problem being obedient. We'll have no problem coming to worship. We'll have no problem sacrificing whatever God calls us to do. What got Abraham through his trials in life, how he could make it through his trials, was the fact that he was looking for a city. He was looking for a city whose builder and maker is God. And what can get us through trials? There's somebody here tonight going through trials, I know. You say, well, how do you know? I'm not a prophet. But when you get about 50 or 60 people together, somebody's got a trial they're going through. I want to tell you what can help you make it through that trial. Maybe a big trial, maybe a small trial. But it's to keep your eyes focused on your goal of heaven. This earth is not going to last forever. And one day, every person sitting here, somebody's going to stand around us and hopefully say some kind words, and they're going to deposit our body in the ground. That's the way it works. Hebrews 9 and verse 27, appointed unto man once to die. And we have to be looking for that city. We have to be looking for that home. And every decision that we make has to be in light of our heavenly home. One day, a wealthy man was facing bankruptcy. He drove through a very rural part of the country, and as he passed this one particular house, it caught his attention. And it was in such bad shape. It needed painting. The doors were falling off. The windows were cracked and falling out. The roof was just in terrible condition. And so the man pulled in. He saw a young little girl, about 8 or 9 years old, standing outside playing. And he just pulled in and he started a conversation with the young girl. And he mentioned to her how sorry he was that she had to live in such poor conditions. And the little girl got real excited. And she said, "Have you not heard? Have you not heard?" He said, "Heard what?" He said, "My daddy just inherited a fortune, and he's building us a mansion just over that hill over there." She said, "I don't know when it's going to be done, but I don't have to live in this house forever." The story was heard by songwriter Ira Stanfield, and he wrote these words: "I've got a mansion just over the hilltop in that bright land where we'll never grow old, and someday yonder we'll never more wander, but walk on streets that are pure as gold." I want to tell you tonight, we will not live in this house forever. We're not going to live in this house forever. And if you're a Christian, if you have followed the example of Abraham, with his faith plus action, with his sacrifice, with a goal in mind, then you have a mansion waiting on you just over the hilltop. And if you're faithful to the end, you'll receive that mansion. Not only will you receive a mansion, you'll receive a crown and a robe. And you'll receive your family members that have passed away in the Lord. Boy, I tell you what, I don't know how anybody can pass up the offer that has been given to us. I don't know. Life lessons from Abraham. Let's be Christians of faith plus action. Don't just say it, but live it. Be doers of the word, not hearers only. Let's be Christians that are willing to sacrifice. Look for opportunities to serve one another. Let's be Christians that live with heaven in mind every single day. We're going to break, I believe, Robert. And then I'm going to offer the invitation. And I want you to very seriously consider the invitation tonight. We'll have a break and then we'll resume in just a few minutes.